Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is James Sagerton. I'm the chair of the National Finance Committee. This is a meeting for June 8, 2021 of the Pacifica National Board's Finance Committee. We believe we have a quorum, and I'm going to convene the meeting at this time and ask the Secretary, R. Paul Martin, to take the roll.
Okay. Please answer up when you hear your name. Sharon Adams. Teresa J. Allen, Nick Arena, Fred Blair,
present,
Chris Corey,
here,
Lyndon Foley,
here,
Elizabeth Von Gunten,
here,
Julie Hewitt,
here,
R. Paul Martin, here, James Sagerton,
here,
Anita Sims?
Here.
Okay, that's eight, and we have a quorum.
Thank you, R. Paul. We're going to move on to the agenda. This is item number three. I'll read the agenda. Excuse me. It began with number one, convene meeting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Number two, roll call. Number three, adopt the agenda. Number four, chair's announcements, 2 minutes. Number five, minutes approval, 3 minutes. Number six, review of corrected KPFT draft budget, previously noticed motion to rescind, 20 minutes. Number seven, ICFO report, Anita Sims, 10 minutes. Number eight, bonds, Chris Corey, 5 minutes. Number nine, NFTs, Lyndon Foley, 5 minutes. Number 10, risk management, Beth Von Gunten. I'm sorry, that should read 5 minutes. It says 10. I apologize, and I see there's something about Lyndon there. After
I'm
that,
having
we
a
need
problem
to eliminate
with the
that.
Server. I'm getting an error message, and there's no audio.
Okay.
Stop and start the audio. What's going on?
Can you hear me, Fred? Fred, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Hang on. I guess we don't know.
We're having a problem with the stream, and it's there's no sound on the stream for some reason.
I see.
I'm going to mute myself and talk to Otis, okay?
Very good. Shall we wait?
Why don't you just go ahead?
I guess we better.
Go ahead. I'm recording in any case.
Oh, okay. R. Paul, is that okay by you?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, if nobody's hearing us, it doesn't seem. But he did say he was recording, so I guess.
James, this is Julie. I just checked my email, and I
yes.
don't see any, just this second, and I don't see any emails from anyone who says, hey, what's going on with the stream? But oftentimes, we don't get started until about now anyway, so.
Right.
I was wondering how
Fred knew. Go ahead, Fred.
I'm reporting it's now working. I was conferring with Otis, and we got it going. So it's working. Continue the meeting.
Okay. Continue or begin again?
No. Why don't you just continue?
Very good. Okay. We were at number 10, which was risk management, Beth Von Gunten, 5 minutes. It says 10, R. Paul. And then there's something about NFTs, Lyndon Foley. That's a typo. So number 10 is just risk management. Beth Von Gunten, 5 minutes. Number 11, review of KPFK's fiscal year 2021 finances. 12, new business, if any. 13, adjourn no later than 10:15 p.m. Eastern Time.
Yes, I'm
on call.
This is not what I have.
Okay, there were two versions, one right after the other.
Oh, so the other version may not have hit yet. Wait, let me see if I get that. I have a different agenda here.
I had some typos and mistakes, which I didn't completely correct, so we still have a couple. They were back-to-back, one right after the other.
Yeah, I only have one, so let me... Okay, second one is in here. So it's this.
It's the latest one. Yeah, second one.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
At 8:35. Wow, yeah. Okay. All right, so I guess I have it.
Okay, well, Arpal is being sure he has it. I'm going to ask if there are any additions, deletions, any discussion on the agenda.
Let Arpal look at this because I saw something wrong in the other one. Let me make sure. Give me a second here.
Of course. Check number 10. That's where the main typo is.
This is Teresa. I just want you to know I'm on the call.
Thank you, Teresa.
Okay. Okay. Number 6 is not a. It's previously noticed to change it.
Correct.
Not to rescind it.
Oh, I thought we had to rescind the previous motion to pass a new one.
No. Previous
okay.
motion. The previous notice was given to change it.
Okay.
This was the simple majority versus two-thirds thing, I think, if I remember
right.
correctly.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct.
Change. Let's put in change for rescind, okay?
Very good.
Oh, and there's a thing... Number 10 has something extraneous on it, right?
Yes.
So get rid of
yes.
that.
Everything after Beth von Guten, 10 minutes, which 10 minutes should be 5. My apology.
5 minutes.
Right.
Okay, that's
and
5
then the
minutes.
NFTs, the NFTs with Lynn and Foley should be deleted. That's a duplicative mention.
Okay. I think I have it now.
Thank you. Okay, any other discussion about the agenda? Any additions? Hearing none, we'll consider that adopted. I'm going to read the chair's announcements. The 2020 audit has gone to the auditors where consolidated trial balances are under sampling review. Tonight, due to the impending due date of the fiscal year 2020 audit, we will not review a draft budget from KPFK as hoped. It is anticipated and expected that before we next meet, the fiscal year 2020 audit will be submitted to the California Attorney General's office, and we will have a rough draft of a KPFT budget to KPFK, that should read, I'm sorry, budget to review. The KPFK draft budget was not approved by the KPFK Finance Committee or the KPFK Local Station Board, LSB. The Pacifica National Board Finance Committee is now tasked by resolutions of the Pacifica National Board, PNB, October 29, 2020, and the KPFK LSB to review the KPFK budget, make appropriate adjustments, if any, and recommend it to the PNB for appropriate action. Tonight, we will make a final review of Pacifica Radio Station KPFT's corrected draft budget. We will consider a noticed motion to change our previous resolution. To recommend it to the PNB for approval with caveats in favor of a clean resolution to recommend that the PNB approve it without reservation. previous notice, R. Paul Martin, to change the motion regarding the KPFT fiscal 21 budget, incorporating corrections from the interim CFO. We will review the March financials. R. Paul?
Yeah?
I thought you said something.
No, I didn't say anything.
Okay, my bad. We will review the March financials. Please check your email at 5:31 Eastern Time to see a resend for tonight's meeting. We will also hear reports tonight from PNB directors on fundraising and other initiatives. There are no other new announcements.
Could you repeat? You corrected one of the – you had one station for another early on. Which one is that? Where?
Yes, it was
Fred here. It was in the first paragraph, I believe, for KPFT should be replaced by KPFK.
Retroactive for KPFK budget to review.
Yeah, second paragraph, third line. It says a rough draft of KPFT budget should be KPFK.
Okay, I got it. Thank you.
Sorry. Thank you, Fred. Okay. I didn't get my typos in order here. All right. Now, Arpal, I understand we have minutes to approve.
Yeah.
When you're ready. I realize you're trying to catch up with all these typos.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I move that we approve the minutes of the May 25th NFC meeting.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection? Very good. We'll consider them approved, remembering that they're always subject to correction at a later date. Now we're at item six, review of a corrected KPFT draft budget, a previously noticed motion to change. This is a 20-minute item. I don't think it will necessarily take that long. So the changes were made. The ICFO corrected all of the changes that we had in our caveats and questions. We needed to notice, as pointed out by our Paul, we needed 7 days notice to make the change. And so now we would simply like to take out all the caveats and questions and recommend to the PNB that they approve this budget. And I have language. And I will send the language around, but it says, motion, the NFC recommends to the PNB the approval of the KPFT fiscal 21 budget. Any discussion?
So the motion is the NFC recommends to the PNB the approval of the KPFT FY21 budget.
Correct. I just sent that around. Is there any objection?
Well, you should ask. Even though you don't have a lot of time here, I think it would be proper if the chair would ask if there's any discussion on it first.
Okay, very good. I agree. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, this is Chris.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I was just curious. I haven't been following this as closely as I should have been. All the corrections and enhancements to that were suggested by the committee have been made, I'm guessing, right? Did I miss that point?
That's correct, and I'll ask Anita to comment on that.
That's correct.
Thank you. Okay. That's all I needed to hear. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And thank you, Anita, for the corrections. Any other discussion? Go ahead.
This is Julie.
I hear you, Julie. Go ahead.
Sure. I just wanted to point out to Chris that I think we confirmed that 2 weeks ago. It was just that we didn't have the ability to do the two-thirds vote, and it wasn't going to make a difference for the next PNB meeting anyway, I think. So we
Thanks
just deferred.
Yeah, I remember that now. Yeah.
That is the history. Thank you, Julie. Any other discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, we'll consider that approved, and that will go to the next PNB meeting. Okay. So now we go to number seven, which is the ICFO report from Anita Sims. Anita, I gave 10 minutes for this. I realize it might not take that long, but I think we wanted to give you a chance to say something about the audits.
Yes, be delighted to. as I was talking to some of you before the call, the trial balance of the financial statements have gone to the auditors. I don't have the exact day, but it was early June. They went ahead and opened the portal, meaning that then we could start uploading all the schedules, the support documentation, what have you. So we're probably about almost a week ahead of our schedule, so we're very delighted with that. And hopefully the auditors are making progress in what they're sampling. The bank confirmations would get those, I believe, have started. The normal processes, if you will. I understand I talked to George before this call. He said there's a few things that he is working on, but he feels confident it's not going to hold up the process. So, again, our deadline is June 15th or 16th. And then we hope that the auditors will be through prior to the last of the month. Again, it's the field work that they're doing now. Be happy to answer any questions that any of you have.
Anita, this is I'll wait and see if anybody else wants to ask a question. But I have one. Anyone else?
Teresa.
Hello,
to the
this
staff.
Is Beth. Beth to the staff.
Okay, let's go with Teresa and then Beth. Teresa?
Yes. I just wanted to know, Anita, do you feel that you are getting what you need from all of the GMs, IGMs, and business managers as quickly as you ask for it? Or have there been any delays?
There's been some few delays, but I think we've gotten past them. George has started meeting with them on every Wednesday. And essentially, and it's not just George, it's really the team on the ETA side and then whoever can join the call. And essentially, we're just trying to build momentum and get them engaged. And they obviously know how important it is. Thank you.
Well, that was exactly, precisely my question. And so I've had a satisfactory answer, and we can go on. Thank you very much. Thank you, Anita.
You're welcome.
Wonderful. I'm going to stick my question in now. Anita, when do you think, and I realize it's probably too soon to tell, but I get it. We're on target to meet the absolute deadline of June 30th to submit to the California AG. Do you think we'll be getting it in sooner than that?
I think so. I mean, the whole idea for us to turn it around to the auditors is that they would do the field work. We would, you know, get the answers, whether we knew them or get them from the station, documentation. I mean, our hope is that we would get it to the audit committee or this committee or whoever by the 21st, the week of the 21st, almost the last week of the month. Again, it may be midweek, 23rd, 24th. Again, that's probably the earliest that we can start to share the draft. Again, as soon as we get it out.
Understood. Thank you very much. Anyone else? Hearing no one, I'm going to just add one more comment. Oh, I'm sorry, someone?
James, it's Nick Arena.
Hi, Nick.
Just a quick comment. I've served on the Finance Committee for almost 6 years, and this is the first time that I've seen that the Foundation has been able to complete its year-end audit, you know, within basically 9 months of fiscal year end. It's not uncommon for not-for-profits that have September 30th to have, you know, audits that aren't completed until June and July. But I think we need to compliment Anita and Tamara and the rest of her team, as well as the business managers in the organization, that we have a 2020 audit almost done by the end of June. That's a heck of a lot of work, and we don't say thank you enough on these calls, and I think we need to say thank you and appreciate what's been done.
Thank you, Nick. I really do appreciate that.
You took the words out of my mouth, Nick, and I think you said it better than I was going to. And I'll just add my thanks. This is cause for celebration for us, and I'm very happy. Anyone else?
Julie,
hearing
Echo,
none.
Same.
Go ahead. Julie, good.
No,
glad
I was
to hear
thinking,
that
yes,
drinking
thanks.
The champagne as we speak.
It must feel good, Anita, that it takes that we're able to do this one so quickly compared to the others.
Yes, it really does. Again, it's all in the timing, but we feel very, very good about it. And you know, all I want is to be able to have the draft and be able to share it with all of you.
And theoretically, going forward into next year, assuming everything remains on course, we'll do even better. This really is wonderful.
Our plan is to close the books in plenty of time. I mean, obviously, we'll need to hold them open to make sure we capture all the expense and revenue, but we're not going to sit on it for 6 months. We want to start much earlier.
Very good. Wonderful. Well, thank you very, very much. And I think with that, we can go on to item number 8, which is Chris Corey discussing bonds for 5 minutes. This is just an update for the Finance Committee on some initiatives that are developing elsewhere in the PMB committees.
Yeah, thank you, James. This is from strategic planning. There's an initiative taking place there to find new sources of revenue for either possibly repaying the loan or for enhancing the revenue of the entire organization. This would be a repayment option for the loan. And the basic strategy is to form a private placement bond that would be available to the membership of the organization. It would be just an internal thing. There's some technical issues with that idea, which I'd be happy to discuss with you. Just ask me after I'm done with my 5 minutes here if you want to get into that. On the practical side, the organization is about the right size for a private placement. The type of financing that's being done is appropriate for a private placement. The size of this initiative is about right. It kind of fits within the parameters of a private placement offering, a small private placement offering for a corporation. And so that's encouraging. Unfortunately, either due to COVID-19, my lack of relationship with correspondence banks and financial type of banks, I do quite a bit of conventional banking, but I don't do really any investment banking. It's not really something I've ever delved into before. I'm finding barriers to entry being a little bit intimidating. I'm just having trouble getting people to correspond with me, basically. But I'm a little bit more optimistic now because I've after failing to make a connection the first time, I actually went out to my existing lenders and basically asked them who they would recommend. And most of them weren't able to answer that question directly, but they fielded the call up the food chain, and I got a response back, and two of the three responses were exactly the same, and that was to use Prudential in San Francisco. So I put in an inquiry with them about this issue. We need an underwriter for this, so if you're wondering why we even have to bother with this, we can't do it directly. It has to be done through some sort of a financial institution. It's part of the process, basically, and so that's the next step. So I've been looking into this a little bit, but I haven't received a reply from Prudential yet. So I'm that's what I'm waiting for at this juncture. But it's only been, what is this? Is this this Tuesday, right? Yeah, it's only been 2 days. So I hope that I hear back from them. But even if I don't hear back from them, I actually have names and phone numbers there that I can call. I just sent an email. So we'll see what happens.
Chris, this is the chair. I want to ask you to comment on when we first started discussing this, an analogy was made to a church that might want to float a bond to build a new wing or even a new church, and they float these bonds to the members of the church, and some of the advantages are the interest rate is lower. Sometimes the members will, rather than collect on the bond, they will make a gift of it to the entity that takes it. Can you just discuss a little bit about the advantages of how this will help us rather than, you know, having a loan with a kind of lender that's charging more commercial rates?
Yes. Yeah, I can do that. So I'll also mention the kind of elephant in the room as far as this goes, too. I'll start off with that, and that's that we can't actually advertise for this. So if we do this, we'll have to send – we can send direct mail to our membership. That's not the same thing as – it can't be a public advertisement. In other words, we can't broadcast this on the radio waves. If the time actually comes, it'll have to be offered directly to the members, because once it's offered to the public, then it falls into a completely different sphere of governance, and it's no longer a private placement offering. It's a public offering, and then it falls under the SEC, and, yeah, we get ourselves into a big auditing mess, and it's crazy and costly. So we don't want to go down that road. But yes, if we can keep it private, then it is very much like, for those of you who are not especially fond of religion, you'll forgive the analogy, but it is like a really big church, maybe a mega church. and these things used to be quite common, especially a century ago, you know, when banking wasn't as widespread as it is now or readily available to average people. And it would just basically be a way that members of an organization could pool their resources for specific capital purposes. And if you think about how those things worked in the past, the mechanism, the membership, the purpose, all of these things actually align pretty well with what our issue is here, that we're trying to retire or privatize, if you will, a debt that is that's to a third party currently, and basically turn over the ownership of this obligation to our membership, which I think makes a lot of sense at a number of different levels. We can expect friendlier negotiations with our members than we can with any sort of an outside entity. And as James mentioned, there will be a tendency to either roll these debts over or to forgive them, I think, in the long run. There's also kind of a funny cycle that can happen with these bond issues, in that when the bond matures, the bond routinely the bonds as they existed in the past and as it would exist in the future if Pacifica did it, would be kind of a rolling entity. So when the bond expired, if there were still debt obligations that remained to be paid at that point, in other words, if we didn't have enough reserves to buy out the bondholders, we'd just do another private placement offering and keep rolling it until such a time and place that we no longer had any obligation to roll over. So anyway, it's just an interesting option for us, but I think it's actually kind of a good one that at least on paper makes sense.
I'm going to ask if there are any questions, and I want to try and get Anita in here for a comment as well. Who was that I heard?
Teresa.
Go ahead, Teresa. R. Paul.
Beth.
And Beth.
Lyndon.
Fred.
Yeah, I heard you, Lyndon. You're second. And Fred.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, let's go with Teresa.
I just wanted to say, you said you compared us to a church.
from my experience, I'm a Unitarian Universalist, and my church did this, and I guess some people call the Unitarian Universalist the unchurch. But you might want to check into a business called Church Mutual.
Church Mutual.
Find
okay.
out find out if they have any suggestions for you.
Awesome. Thank you. We'll do that.
Thank you for that. Very good. Lyndon?
Yes, Chair. Thank you. I'm writing down Church Mutual myself. So,
me too.
So, Chris, when you were talking about the size of the organization and the size of what we're looking at, could you, have you told, what did you tell the people that you've talked to? And is it just some range? I know that I've expressed a number before, and I just wanted to see if we were in the same range.
Yeah, so, 3 to 5 million is what I've been telling people.
Okay.
I use the high end there for oversubscription just in case, you know, we could actually obtain that. It would be actually great if we could have a cash reserve around. As far as the size of the organization, I've been routinely quoting 10 million. That's not quite accurate. 9 is probably closer. But,
what?
10
million,
yeah,
9 million? What?
9 million in revenue, I think, is about what Pacific.
Okay. Thank you.
So, yeah, those are the two numbers that I've been bandying about.
Thank you.
Paul?
All right. Very fast. Just making sure, I think I know the answer to this, but I want to hear it. Although we cannot make the offering publicly, we can let the world know that it's happening, right?
Yeah, we can announce the offering. It just can't. But when it's announced, it has to be really clear that it's a members only private offering.
Right. So we can say, hey, we're doing that stuff. And, you know, okay. Thank you.
No problem.
Beth. Beth, are you muted?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I was,
don't worry.
But now I'm not.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for the prompt. Yes, most of my financial experience is with credit unions, so I'm not as familiar with banks. What limited experience I've had with banks has come through the nonprofit boards I've sat on. And there's one bank in this neck of the woods, a private bank, that is very well known for dealing kindly with nonprofits.
Okay.
And I don't – excuse me?
I'd be interested in hearing that.
Yes. Do you want to know – shall I tell you which bank now?
I think that's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the Montecito Bank and Trust has been especially copacetic to deal with. I was introduced to the bank through, I chaired the finance committee at the last, or the fund development committee rather, at the last board I sat on, and my correspondent on the staff, the fund development director, had a long-standing relationship with this bank, and I'm due to have lunch with her again anyway, and if it would be useful to have an introduction, I can arrange for that. She worked a whole long lifetime on affordable housing and getting grants grants and other kinds of funding, loans and things that sound like they're roughly in the same order of magnitude as what we're talking about. So I'd be happy if there's anything I can do to help facilitate that, to check out that option. Let me know.
Actually, if you could just send me an email, I'll just have you ask her a simple question. It's kind of a screening question for the financial institution. And, and if she passes through that filter, then we can start a conversation.
Excellent. Okay. Good plan. You'll hear from me. Thank you.
This is the chair. I want to ask if anyone would like to move to extend for, say, 3 minutes on this item.
So moved. Beth.
Any objection? We'll extend for 3 minutes then. Thank you. Let's go to Fred.
Yes. Can you hear me?
We do.
Thank you. I don't have much experience in this area. My experience has mostly been with credit unions. I'm just curious what the minimum investment is in such a private offering bond. And I don't know if you said anything about that in your earlier presentation, Chris. I'm just curious, you know.
I missed the first part of that question, Fred. I'm sorry, you cut out for a second.
Okay, I'm sorry.
One more time?
Yeah, I'm just...
No, it's okay.
I'm just, for individuals, I'm just interested in what the minimum amount of money it would be to purchase a bond in this offering.
Oh, those minimums are actually set by the institution that's making the offering. But the general rule, I think, is something in the neighborhood of 1,000. Sometimes they're denominated as low as 500.
Okay, so individuals of moderate income could invest in our organization then. It's doable.
Correct. And I would view this as an investment because this would be an interest bearing certificate and depending on how strongly you feel about Pacifica, it's in an institution that's been around for a good long while. The hope is that would continue to be around a good long while, having had the benefit of that investment. So we're not going to be producing any sort of A-rated paper here, AAA plus or whatever. I think people can feel reasonably confident that these bonds will go all the way to maturity and pay out interest the whole while that they're sitting there. So it's a long-term, it's a long-term investment.
Thank you.
Sure. Anyone else?
I had a question or just a comment. This is Anita.
Yes, Anita. I was just asking you while muted if you would comment.
I think it's a great, great idea, and I do have experience with some of this. And if you need a name of a bank in Colorado, be happy to provide, to introduce you or whatever.
Sure. Yeah, and actually what I wanted to – I should add just one more little thing to this whole thing, and that's that I started out going with trying to find institutions that were actually affiliated with Pacifica, and that just wasn't working at all. The type of lending institution that actually is willing to back these – sort of ventures is really not a typical bank, and so we're pretty much engaged as an organization with typical banks, unfortunately, and so most of them are just they don't really even know what I'm talking about when I start asking questions about this stuff. We kind of need a bank that specializes in investment vehicles, and so
right.
that's kind of the hurdle that has to be crossed.
I will check on that before I share the name, then.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Is there anyone else? Anyone else?
Lyndon.
Go ahead, Lyndon.
I'd just like to, Fred, how much money do you have? That was my answer to the question.
Very good.
Lyndon, more than the minimum that Chris mentioned, but not a lot.
Good
more.
Deal.
Anyone else? I'm going to add a comment then. We in the Church of Pacifica have a friend, the Reverend Billy of the Church of Stop Shopping, and I want to quote him. One of his favorite things to say is "Change-a-luya."
There you go.
All right. So I guess we're done with that item. Thank you very much, Chris. You've done a lot of work there. It's very good, very forward-looking. And now let's go to a discussion of NFTs by Lyndon Foley for 5 minutes. And, of course, okay. We can extend
Thank
if it
you.
Gets good. Go ahead.
Thank you, James. Most of y'all, we seem to be all, a lot of us, the same committee as the Strategic Planning Committee. So you heard this last night, but I know the treasurers probably haven't heard it. We have been working. We had a couple of meetings extra outside of the Strategic Planning Committee with a smaller group, and we are working on maybe using something from New York City as our test case, but it's run into some problems. We have also asked and met with the archivist at Pacifica Archives for some information on which of the archives we could possibly use. We've asked to have some of the material forwarded to us so we could examine it. And a lot of time has been spent just reading and studying up on this very arcane world, which, you know, none of us grew up in, because it just grew up in the last, you know, 10, 15 years. Anyway, the big news to report, I think, is that Major League Baseball, which has already had a presence in the NFT market, is coming out with a really big thing in, you know, to people of my age, and by James and R. Paul up there in New York City. They are going to put the videotape and at least the audio of Lou Gehrig's I'm the Luckiest Man in the World speech up for auction on July 4th. And I think it's a real test case for the type of material we have. And so we're all anxiously awaiting that. And I'm going to try to push to get something done in the next 4 to 6 weeks. But we still have to get a little bit of money from National, you know, probably just $200, maybe $300. And we have to get a sample that we don't think is too valuable, but at least could get some interest. That's my report.
Thank you, Lyndon. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll go ahead then to item 10, which is risk management, Beth von Gunten, and it's 5 minutes. Beth?
Maybe she's muted. I'm
Let's
muted
see.
Again. Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you.
No worry.
So you don't have to listen to me cough. In my work on the Strategic Planning Committee, I started out with a project on emergency management because it's necessary and required, and most organizations could be better than they are, and it's a prerequisite to qualifying for significant funding, like on the order of magnitude of the PPP funding if we do it right. But the more I worked on it and the more I worked on other issues in other committees, the more I realized all of this falls under the heading of risk management as a whole. And so I'm looking at the work as more comprehensively now as a risk management strategy to ratchet down liability and design robustness, stability, and resilience into our systems, recognizing that current risks are amplified beyond what they have been in the past. Risk management is an organizational commitment to recognize and confront the risk of harm in a planned and disciplined way, to anticipate, evaluate, mitigate, prepare for, and respond to potential adverse events affecting Pacifica and the fulfillment of its mission. When those of us who are directors and officers of Pacifica took on these responsibilities, we accepted the responsibility and a legal obligation to protect Pacifica from harm risk management is an emerging best practice among nonprofits. As a nonprofit, Pacifica faces many of the same risks as for-profits, but with the additional obligation to protect donors' contributions of time and money, which is always more challenging within a constrained budget. It's an ongoing process. It takes time, effort, and oversight, a natural bailiwick for the governance of an organization. And then the year slips and you begin again. While it may seem tedious, ultimately it saves time and money and grief in both the short and long term. A proactive approach on risk prevention reduces liability, increases credibility and credit worthiness, helps prevent negative headlines, and builds a strong, stable, and resilient organization. Are there questions? I should let James ask that.
That's quite all right, Beth. Any questions?
If no one else has a question,
this is
Lyndon. I have a question.
This is Lyndon.
Go ahead, Lyndon.
Beth, did you get something from our GM today?
I heard, so as background information for the rest of the committee, I wrote to the general managers of all 8 Pacifica units more than a month ago, asking for copies of their current emergency management plan or their emergency response plan. And when I didn't hear back from them, I resent it. It kind of amplified it a bit as a director's inspection. And still not having heard back from that, I reported to the Strategic Planning Committee yesterday, and that worked. I got my first report back from David Bays today, reporting on the work he's been doing recently. He's new to KPFT, and he's been bringing them into much better state of readiness. And I thanked him. I told him he got bonus points for being first. And that if once we had, this was for a base, to establish a baseline, find out where all our units are at the present time, and take it from there in planning what we need to do next. So yes, thank him for me very much. I wrote back to him immediately, and you can extend my thanks to him and report to your board too that he did respond promptly after yesterday's request. Thank you. And then before we're done with the item, once everyone else has asked what they need to,
yeah,
I have a question.
Let's see if anyone else has a question. Any other questions? I'm wondering if Anita would like to comment on how other radio stations are handling these kinds of situations.
That's my question.
Those that we
work with. We always come back to you, Anita.
Those that we work with that are a dual licensee do have an emergency written policy, if you will. If you like, I could get some material as an example also for the group too.
Yes, please.
Wonderful.
I will write
And does NEDA as an organization address the issue of risk management per se beyond just emergency management?
Not really. I mean, we address risk management by the nature of the work that we do as far as our client base by having a statement from our largest vendor, which is really our IT support.
Yeah.
So they come out with a statement, if you will, essentially backing up that the work is not going to get lost, if you will. But it does not address it in any other way.
Okay.
But I will get a copy of the emergency plan policy.
Any examples you might have would be very, very welcome. Thank you.
Be happy.
Beth, I have a question. This is the chair.
Yes.
And it is having to do with I hate to use the term, but I'm going to do it anyway because I can't think of another way to say it right now, the hardening of facilities. I recall the experience we had in New York when the hurricane or the superstorm Sandy came through, and our building on Wall Street was up to the ceiling of the first floor in flooding, and the basement where all the telephone lines were located and the electronics, a lot of the electronics, the electricity supply was coming from, was flooded, and it caused a lot of damage. And I know in California we have earthquake vulnerability. It seems like in Texas and Washington we have flood vulnerabilities. And I know, of course, in emergencies, radio stations is where people can go to get information when there is an emergency, especially one that takes out the normal electric power grid. If you've got batteries and you can tune into a radio station, you can get emergency information. So I was just wondering if you could comment on whether that kind of planning for those kinds of eventualities and even funding for protecting our facilities and our sites for those kinds of emergencies may be available?
Yes, and yes. Radio communications qualifies as critical infrastructure, and that's a special category when it comes to FEMA. And FEMA is where the big money is for these kinds of things. And they have prepared this grants. They have response grants. They have facilities grants, security grants. There's a wide range of grants available. Significant money, well worth the time and effort it takes to qualify, that could really upgrade our facilities. And just addressing the issue of the kinds of incidences we've already had and that we are surely facing at some point in the future, I guess I didn't even know. I wasn't on the board yet, so I didn't really have KPFT in mind when Harvey hit and dropped more than 36 inches of rain in a day on a relatively flat Houston. But it's not hard to guess what happened there. And the same with Sandy. I read about those accounts. I've been through a number of the fires out here. I evacuated from the Thomas Fire in Ventura. I watched it roar across the hill hours ahead of what it was expected to, driven by 80-mile-an-hour winds, and evacuated from that. And last year, I watched hour by hour as the Bobcat Fire encroached on our tower on Mount Wilson, where there's $1 billion of telephonic broadcast equipment on that one slender ridge. And if they didn't save anything else, they were determined to save that. And they did. But we stand a better chance of coming through those things and recovering and being able to function if we prepare. There are two functions to cover. One is the internal preparedness and response, and then for an agency like ours that is outward facing toward the public, we have to get our own house in order and be able to respond before we can address the public need for emergency information. And
Beth, I'm going to ask you to suspend for a moment because we're out of time for this. Would anyone like to extend?
This is Lyndon. I'll move to extend for 3 minutes.
Thank you, Lyndon. Any objection? We'll go for 3 minutes more. Beth, go ahead.
There's an issue that should probably be addressed at our tech task force and strategic planning and possibly elsewhere is the distinction between broadcast medium, which that's our license is given for a broadcast medium, and that's our history. That's written into our mission statement, and digital broadcasting. which is internet dependent and nowhere near as robust as broadcast. And it's not that I don't think we should do digital, but I think that in light of emergency preparedness, we really kind of have an obligation to prioritize broadcast first, so that because the internet is much more likely to go down than broadcast is, and when in any of these major emergencies, when the internet goes down, when you can't get phone service, the first thing people do is go, you know, dig around in the back of a drawer or their trunk or their glove box to find that old radio that they had, and then they search the dial. And if they find us, at a moment like that, they will never forget us. They will be back again and again and again. I watched how a couple of the public radio stations out here really leveraged themselves up into new levels of listener involvement on the basis of response to those emergencies. I don't know whether people have other questions or not, but that's probably enough for me for now.
Okay, Beth, that was wonderful. We appreciate it. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, I'm just going to conclude this sort of semi-section of the meeting by saying that these are items that have been under review in the Strategic Planning Committee and other places, and I just wanted to bring them to this committee, even though I think half or more of our members are on this committee are on the Strategic Planning Committee. I wanted to bring it to the treasurers here so they could bring it back to their LSBs and their management, and just basically spread the news about these items. And, you know, perhaps there are people who can contribute information or participation in trying to effectuate some of these ideas on the local levels. And so that's why we have brought it here to the committee. So now we can move on to number 11, and I realize now that's a little vague what I put there, but what I had in mind specifically was a review from the KPFK directors here, who I have talked to about it, and perhaps even Anita, with a report on how KPFK is doing in their recent fund drive. We know they initially had a $650,000 goal, and they changed that to $400,000, and I understand they did make it after one of the longest, if not the longest, fund drive in their history. So I just want to open up this question to see if anybody wants to add any information or make any report on the question of the ongoing fiscal problems at KPFA and the recent fund drive.
Fred, can Fred be recognized?
Absolutely, Fred. Thank you.
Yeah. I see that our business manager is not present, so I'll make a very short report on the KPFK fund drive.
Just to be clear, Fred, he was not invited. I did not invite him.
Okay.
He was here last time. I did not ask him to come again.
Okay.
But we will again. We will ask him again. Go ahead, Fred. Sorry.
In any case, the fund drive goal was not reduced to $400,000, but after the original fund drive was to go through June 23rd. I'm sorry, through May 23rd, and the interim general manager, Mo Thomas, decided to extend it for another 11 days to go through June 4th. And his personal goal was to, because at the time that he was getting to the original end of the fund drive, they had only raised $350,000. So he wanted to reach at least $400,000 before ending the fund drive. And as of Monday, when I checked on the Allegiance website for the totals from the fund drive, we had $410,000 in pledges, And I understand that there's some there's about $20,000 outside of the Allegiant system that has also come in. But I don't have any details on that. So we have reached beyond $400,000 in pledges as of June 4th. That's the good news. The bad news, of course, is that this fund drive started on April 20th and ran through June 4th. That's probably the longest fund drive I can ever remember. It's 45 days. That's almost a month and a half of fund drive. So I don't know what the fulfillment rate is at this point in time, what the actual number of how much money has actually come into the bank account, but it's probably in excess of 75%, maybe 80% of that pledge level. And that I think that's about it. If anybody has questions, please ask them.
This is Anita, if I may comment.
Go ahead.
The fulfillment rate, according to Barry, is 81.4%. And the average donation was about $157. In the operating account, they have about $151,000, but you know, we have payroll next week. They were able to pay their health benefits, and some monthly vendor payments were made also. He also comments that they're struggling to make a payment to for central services, and they also the network affiliate about $17,000 from a previous payroll funding. So
they haven't repaid the $17,000. Is that what you're saying?
No, that's correct.
Thank you for those additional numbers. That gives more substance to the fund drive. But basically, that $400,000 in pledges is basically hand-to-mouth. That will barely cover the 2 months of the fund drive and then the regular programming through the end of June. So our general manager hasn't stated when the next fund drive will start, but I'm probably sure that it's going to have to start by early July. That's my guess.
I have that it will start after the July 4th weekend celebration.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Fred. Finish your thought.
I don't have any additional information to provide. So if there are questions, I'll see if I can answer it.
Thank you, Fred. I think I heard Beth.
No, it was Teresa.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Teresa.
I guess my question right now is, do you have a development director, and do you have someone that's in charge of the pledge drive that their approach is to help the programmers raise the money, or is this person expected to do it all themselves? Last time I heard a presentation, there was just something that was said that made me think, well, there's an attitude or a feeling that only certain people can raise money, and I'm just wondering, does everybody have that attitude? Surely not, but I just wondered. So what is the development?
Can I respond, James?
Go ahead, Fred. I thought I heard somebody else.
Beth.
Okay, Beth.
After Fred.
After Fred.
Thank you, Beth. Okay. As far as I know, we don't have a development director, and since we're reducing staff to cut expenses, I don't know if there's anybody in that position temporarily. Also, I have one additional number, and that is that the daily average for the fund drive at the end of the fund drive on the, was basically $9,000 a day, which is the lowest daily average of the four fund drives we've had so far this fiscal year.
Thank you, Fred.
I'll now turn it over to Beth.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Beth.
Thank you. Yes, when I first came onto the LSB a year and a half ago, it was our programming director who would coordinate the fund drives. And he did have, he was very, this was a major part of his job. He dedicated a lot of time and energy to it. He had a very difficult time getting commitments or actual implementation from most programmers. The task tended to fall to the paid programmers because there's got more leverage there and you know where to find them. But he managed to keep us limping along until his position was eliminated back in January, at which point there was no one doing that. It was about the same time that we did have a development director, but her position was eliminated too. And then in, I think it was March, I'd have to look again to see, but then our general manager left, and there's an interim general manager now, but he's managing mostly from 3,000 miles away or Texas. And so there hasn't really been anyone to coordinate efforts on a day-to-day basis and to hold programmers accountable for their to pull their weight in fundraising or to offer the opportunity.
Beth, so I'm going to congratulate you on not discussing anyone's job performance, but I think I just want to say you're close to the edge, so I'm not asking you to stop. I'm just asking you to be cognizant of that.
I shall.
And you have been. I appreciate that.
I'm trying to lay out as diplomatically as I know how what the situation is at the station and why we're looking at the dynamic that we are. And I think until we address the issue of staffing, stabilizing staffing, we're going to be confronted with these problems. I sit on the, I was elected to the General Manager Search Committee, which is meeting several times a week at this point to go through applications, and hopefully we'll have proposals for our LSB at the next LSB meeting, and we can get someone in place as soon as possible to get a hold of the situation. So thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Any other comments or questions? Excuse me.
I have one other question.
Go ahead.
And that question is there anyone specifically working on retrieving lapsed donors?
Shall I respond to that, James?
I'm going to ask you to respond, but before you do, I'm going to say that I'm aware that there is, at least there was, a three-person membership department, full-time employees. I don't know if they do that. I'll defer to Beth or Fred for that information.
As this is Beth, as far as I know, that's not a regular practice. We've discussed it at several governance committees, governance level committees, I should say, as necessary. But I haven't seen it implemented yet. I would like to see that happen. It's needed, very much needed.
Call me sometime.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Hearing none, that brings us to, hello, somebody? I keep hearing noises. I think it's a person. I guess not. Okay, that will bring us then to item 12, which is new business. Is there anyone who has new business? Hearing none, we come to a miracle of miracles, speaking of churches. We come to item 13, adjourn no later than 10:15 p.m., and I think we're actually early for the first time, I think, ever, as far as I can recall. So I think I can announce that we are adjourned, unless I hear any objection or new business.
Wow.
Yay.
None.
Whoa.
None. We're done.
Goody.
Wow.
We're really done.
Good night.
Good work, people. Thank you all very much.
All right. Thank you.
Great meeting. Don't be so easy next
time.
Oh,
we must be getting good at this.
Yeah. All right. See you next time.